Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to turn the page and return to our exposure of Paul and our condemnation of Paul. Now, you're not going to find many radio shows. In fact, this may be the only one. In fact, I would be willing to wager this is the only one in America and maybe the only one in the world. Devoted in part to exposing and condemning the author of half of the Christian New Testament, proving absolutely and conclusively that Paul was not only a false prophet, but that he was a false apostle, and that rather than being inspired by Yahweh, he was possessed by Satan. Those would be fighting words in most circles, but they are nonetheless true, aren't they, Kirk?
Get out of Montgomery, Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Baptists would get you.
Yeah, the Baptists would get you, but yet they wouldn't have a leg to stand on.
Not a leg to stand on.
No.
I tell you what I did. I don't want to throw you off from your designated rounds here, but I went back to Bar Midbar, or not Bar Midbar, Bar Rashith 49, and I read and broke down again the section on Benjamin, and it's extremely revealing, word by word by word. And I won't go into a long thing, but if you want something.
Sure, yeah, please, don't go ahead, why don't you?
Okay. Well, as you know, that's when Jacob is given his blessings to his sons.
Right.
And most of them are not very good. He is very fond, obviously, of Judah. He gives some nice blessings to him because the scepter is not leaving him and so on.
Yeah.
I broke that one down.
And that's Yahudah, which means related to Yah and to relate to Yah. Both are marvelous concepts. To relate to Yah, you listen to what he has to say and you respond. That's how you relate to Yah and you engage in the covenant, which is a relationship with Yah. And so related to Yah is a very positive thing. You can ultimately be related to Yah by being adopted into his covenant family. And then, and so related to Yah and relates to Yah. Communicate with, engage in a relationship with, and be adopted in his family and therefore be related to. That is Yahudem, Yahudah in the plural, Yahudem. That's a really good position. So yes, Jacob was most generous in his praise and his prophecies regarding Yahudah.
Well, there was two things before we moved to the other one. There was a couple of words in there that was that always get two at least that always get translated wrong or by the preachers and so forth. And
okay, you're talking about that blessing of Jacob's blessing. And prophecy regarding Yahudah?
Well, yeah, they call it, well, there's a couple of words in there, and they, from that, if they change the meaning, then they move off into a whole other area, like the scepter. He said the scepter will stay with him, which is a staff, yes, it could be a spear, it's also a writing implement, and it's a measuring rod. So those have different connotations than a ruler's staff, or ruler's thinking of the king's scepter, you know.
Yeah, I always thought that the scepter, you're now more studied on this than I am, but I always thought that the scepter was being used as the designation, the designation or symbol that the individual had the right to rule, and it was which is really interesting in that during the Roman times, right up to the Roman times that Yahudah had absolutely no influence. At that point, they could not do anything without Roman approval. That's why they had to send Yosha to be judged by Pilate, as that they didn't have any authority on their own. So the scepter, the symbol of authority, of being able to make determinations and impose them, was gone from them. So that's what I always thought it was, and I knew that the word also meant measuring rod. So you're the one that gets to set the measures and the standards.
Well, there's a couple of things that Yehuda when I think of them, I don't think of them as a ruler like you extrapolate. He told them not to have a king. So when I think of a scepter and a ruler, I think more of a king, and he told them don't have a king. And of course, they went after a Benjamite named Saul.
I know. But, talk about prophetic. You know, talking about all the things that the Roman Catholic Church and the clerics and kings that it had deployed on the people to create the lord serf political fascist state of economics in Europe. And you read Yahweh's condemnation of the idea of empowering Paul to power. Oh my! It's exactly what happened into much of the world as opposed to just Israel for a time.
Yeah. So instead of thinking in those terms, let's think about some other things like the older meanings of Shabbat. Shbth is the shin and a bayeth and a tall. No, I'm sorry. Is it a tall? No, I don't think it's a tall. It's the other T, the fifth.
Okay.
But regardless, those letters don't come across that way as a ruler. But it also means a walking staff leads. It also means a tree branch, a tribe, and a branch of a family tree.
Right.
And all of those have a totally different connotation, more in line with what we think of.
As the Torah. The Torah.
They kept the, you know, they didn't.
The Torah, the Masiyah. Yeah.
They didn't burn it up, you know. They kept it so that we could find it. And that's the thing. They stored it so we could find it as the
Torah. Well, actually, think about this. From Yahweh's perspective, what is the standard and measure? The Torah. The measure of relationship, of opportunity, of what is will be considered acceptable. The Yah's measure and standard is the Torah. So, is there a book and a tablet that Yah, he says, the scepter also speaks of a writing implement that Yahweh made certain was written down for posterity? Yeah, it's the Torah again. And where is Yahweh shown, as the shepherd?
And the Torah.
Yeah, the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, right.
Is there any way to relate to Yahweh without having a Torah?
No, and of course...
Unless he comes and gets you and talks to you personally, there's no other way, is there?
Right, and who was the human embodiment of the Torah?
Yahusha.
Yeah, and what did Yahusha refer to himself as?
As the Word.
Yeah, and as the Shepherd, and also as the Branch, because the Branch was synonymous with the shoot of Jesse.
Right.
The branch represents the Masiyah. It's a shoot off of Yisrael, shoot off of Yahweh. So, the branch of hope, the olive branch, that's the Masiyah. So the scepter, when you really dig into its full connotations, is telling us that is Yahusha, that is the Masiyah, that is Yahweh, that is the Torah, that is the standard.
Well, in another word, I did about three words in this. Stuff,
okay.
So significant.
Okay. And anything else on the scepter that is?
That's it. We can extrapolate some more, but I mean, just but when you get the family tree and we're tied onto the branch, you know, you grafted onto the branch.
Right.
But
it's the ability to establish rule. To rule. So where are Yahweh's? Where does Yahweh establish conditions for authority and for rule, and where does he even set the rules if you want to be part of his family?
His covenant.
Yeah, covenant. And the Torah, right? And the Torah, which the covenant is presented. So that makes perfect sense. Okay, so that's scepter.
So that's the connotation a preacher would just go off on. The rulers of the south and that sort of thing, versus Ephraim. In the north, but regardless.
Yeah, there was a division. That division ended up with Ephraim, Israel being essentially lost to time, drug off into captivity into Babylon, and it left just Benjamin and Yehuda in the south, and to a great degree, Yehuda, through thick and thin, still continued to preserve and to communicate the Torah.
Yeah, well, the archaeologists do know where they went. I mean, you know that.
Yeah, in terms of the tribes of Israel, they went to Assyria and Babylon, and then from there they were scattered around the world. It's just that in terms of individual identity, it's probably impossible for anyone to tell at this point.
There we would disagree, because I read an awful lot about this on the thing.
Uh-huh.
But without boring the audience too much, they, you know, at the king, what's his name, the seventh king I forget the king's name, but Qumri, or sometimes Umri, but Qumri is the king that the seventh king, and they were taken into captivity, and they were used as a buffer zone between the Medes and the Persians.
Right.
And they found out they were pretty good fighters, so they started recruiting their sons, according to the historians. And they, after a while, they offered them, later, they said, you want to go back to Israel? And they said no, and they headed off through the Caucasus Mountains. Now, from that point on, there's nothing on this side of the mountains that's recorded. But within 1 year, the Greeks called these people, and that's where they coined the term Keltoids.
Mm.
And there was 1 million people crossed that thing, according to the Greeks. That's not a question. It's that 1 million people leave on one side of the mountain and on the other side of the mountain. And then they carried with them still a lot of the same symbolism that each tribe carried to begin with. And those have been found in tombs all over northern Europe, Russia, and so forth. So, I mean, we know pretty much where they went dispersed after that. At least it's enough information. It doesn't mean anything to me, because when you walk away from God, you walk away from God.
Correct.
So, to me, it didn't matter whether he was Ishmael or Ephraim.
Right.
You walk away, you walk away. So
right.
It doesn't have a connotation like, oh, gosh, this finding these people means something.
It's, yeah.
But that many people don't just disappear in with a group of people that always record something.
No. Well, a number of them stayed there. I mean, there was a very large Jewish population of Iran prior to 1948, and in 1948 they were summarily dismissed. They were booted out of their homes. Their property was stolen, and they were told, you know, leave or die. So, you know, there were quite a few still there, and a number, particularly of Yehuda, returned to Israel, as we have learned, and were dispersed from there by the Romans. So you're suggesting, Kirk, that beyond the obvious, which is that the population of Yehudim that were living in Israel and that Hadrian lured back into to Yehuda, the province of Yehuda, with the promise of rebuilding the temple and the capital after the last Roman destruction of it, and then declared war on them when they returned and slaughtered them and exiled essentially all of them, made it illegal for a Jew to live in Yehuda, and took them back to Europe, to Italy and other Roman provinces as slaves. So they had large populations throughout Europe because of the Roman diaspora. But you're saying that the population in Russia and in that, in the Caucasus region of Russia, was derived from the Ephraim, the ten tribes, a significant number of them after the Medes and Persian Medes destroyed Babylon, that they went their way and began to live in that area of what we know today as Russia.
It'd be hard to fight all the evidence the archaeologists have found and the symbols that they used and so forth. And I've got several books on. But once again, the focus is on Judah and Benjamin, and I didn't mean to go on that little side, but I mean it's interesting.
Okay.
But I mean, you have to remember, you had three sons that were all part of the family from Noah, and they took off and said goodbye.
Right.
You know, so they no longer.
Right.
And that's
yes,
what
right.
Europe was made up of first, in Asia and Africa
right,
and so forth.
Right.
So who's getting who? I mean, the world walks away from Yahweh.
Oh, yeah, and now.
So, I mean, it's no significance in finding them or caring about them. And
the way is narrow and few find the path to life. Yep.
Exactly.
But the way is broad and it's popular, that is, to death and destruction.
But what I was kind of fascinated with in this little translation I was doing mm-hmm. on this was I'm putting it in the context of the two most important tribes left in there other than the Lohi that are dedicated to Yahweh. You have the Yehuda and you have Benjamin.
Right.
And they have a terrible history of hating each other.
Yes.
In particular, Benjamin hating Yehuda.
Yeah, jealous.
They just couldn't stand it. I mean, they fought over, they didn't want Jerusalem to be the capital, if you recall, and when Dode set it up. If you remember, Dode's son, I forget, this is the real pretty one, I forget his name, he was just handsome as all get out, and he went up to the Benjamin group, and he told them, you know, and sided with them against his father. You know, eventually he gets killed, hung up in a tree by his long hair, you know,
right.
that sort of thing. And so, I mean, these people the Benjamites can't stand them. They are warlike people. The description of to Judah and the blessing given by his father, what's thrown off by the English translations, you have like later they're going to say these people who are obedient or submissive to the Lord, which it should have been revere. And then I looked up the oldest translation and it has the head and the heat from the top of a head. And I said, what the heck does that mean? So I kept looking. And you find in some other dictionaries and other lexicons and all, you have the burning in the hearth. And the heart is, of course, the heart of the home.
Right.
You can extrapolate a little bit and allow me to do so. The heart is where, and it also says the passion, the heart, and the desire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's always been in Judah, to at least some group, some small remnant is within the house of Judah.
Yeah.
So, and then it says, we'll keep that between your feet, or you'll keep that scepter, until Shiloh comes. And then they just kind of don't say anything about Shiloh. But if you look deep enough, it's the one who comes, the peacemaker, which, of course, we're talking about Yahweh returning in the very
right.
end. And
right.
They're
and
all
for reconciliation, on the day of reconciliation. Right.
So in that backdrop, you've got quite a blessing, I would think, of Yehuda. And then you go over to Paul, I mean, sorry.
To Benjamin. Same. They're one and the same, right.
The first thing, I'll jump to the very last word first, and then I'm not taking up too much time.
No, go ahead.
Okay, Benjamin, of course, it says son of the right hand, which is pretty good, but it could also be standing on the right hand of any deity as well. And obviously, they're always against God more than they're with him. But it also, his mother, Rachel, she called him the son of my sorrow.
Wow.
That's a horrible thing to call your kid.
Right.
The son
of my sorrow.
Yeah.
And what has made Yahweh most sorrowful in Christianity? Well, I guess the only thing that's made him more sorrowful than Christianity may be Judaism. But he wrote so much on that. And second unto that would be Christianity, because they not only turned on his people, they turned on him. So, Kirk, before we return to Paul, Benjamites, and their animosity towards Yahudah, of course, Yahusha represents Yahudah, and Paul was jealous of him and tried to tear him down. So the parallels here are consistent with everything else Yahweh has to say, exposing and condemning Paul and Pauline Christianity. But how far are you away from the fires that are just ravaging Northern California?
Well, you can. I'm pretty far away, but they affect all the area because you can't go out certain areas and things like that. So the travelers and you remember the trucks have to come down those freeways and all that sort of thing. So it's and it's the cost. And my God, they just they've got 800 firefighters, 8,000 firefighters out there. I mean, the state can't afford it. I mean, I don't want to look at it that clinically. You got to do what you have to do, but I mean. So the heat and so forth has been so bad that Yeah, it's burning. California's kind of burning up, but it's always cyclical. I've been out here for, 38 years. I mean, we have fire season, and it always comes, and half of it's lit by crazy people, and some of it is just unfortunate situations. But that's kind of cyclical. Eventually, it will rain, and they'll fill up all the water holes. And,
yeah.
You know, but right now, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, well, all right, let's stay safe. All right, so what did have to say about it?
I broke down this blessing, and if you I don't know if I'd call it a blessing. He broke down what he offered for Benjamin, and I'll read it to you real quick, and then you'll find that every word in here is horrible.
Okay, by the way, the right-hand thing before we move on.
Okay.
The territory afforded the Benjamites was the smallest, Paul chose that name, lowly and little. And it sits down below Jerusalem, and anytime you orient a map, north is always up on a map. Maps, have always been drawn that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what is to the right hand, immediate right hand of Yehuda?
The territory of Benjamin.
Yeah, that's right.
Jordan River.
Right. Right. So it's little. It's lowly. It's down below Yehuda, and it's at the right-hand side of Yehuda.
Yeah.
So what he's describing here is its relationship to Yehuda: small, insignificant, lower, and at the right-hand side. And that's all Benjamin means, is a son of the right hand. So it's the right-hand side of Yehuda, smaller, insignificant, and considerably lower.
Now, what I'm about to do, I may be extrapolating too much, but
okay.
This is literally what the translators or the lexicons tell us these words mean, and if you take it in the context of thinking about Paul, it's pretty frightening. Now, the first thing, I'll just read it. It's a little disjointed because this is a verbatim.
Okay.
It says, the spoil he shall divide. And
wow. And the spoil. Now, think about that.
Well, wait a minute. I'm going to tell you what each one of these words are in a minute, and
okay.
It's really freaking out. So, the spoil he shall divide, and at night the prey he shall devour.
Mm.
In the morning, ravenous is a wolf, Benjamin. Now, it's disjointed because that's a literal word-by-word
thing. Right.
But, so I looked up every one of these words to see if I could find something decent about it.
Yes.
Now, I don't think he was just talking about the warlike people of the tribe of Benjamin.
Right.
He was and he wasn't. But if this is not about Paul, I don't know what to say. So the first one, when we talk about spoil, is also called plunder.
Mm-hmm.
It means, so the older meanings are to draw out, or also draw out an infant as to draw out of the mother. Now, I thought about the set-apart spirit there drawing out the children. It may stress it too much, but the spoils are drawn out after a battle as well, like a prey.
Yeah, well, he did. He drew out those who could have otherwise become the members of the covenant and drew them away from God. And even those that were members of the covenant, he tried to drive them away from God. In fact, Yosha said that if this person will separate even the chosen. So, I mean, he was extraordinarily persuasive in this regard. And that's why Yahweh and Yosha were so concerned about his influence, that he would separate even those that were set apart, drawing them away.
Yeah, a little interesting aside, also on this word, that was it's a hen yod lamb,
mm-hmm.
Shayel, which is the spoil or plunder. And when I looked up the root on it, there's another word which is just the reverse. One of the root words on there is shen. I'm Shin Lamb K.
Mm-hmm.
And that means to mislead.
Wow.
And I thought that was kind of interesting just because my brain has gotten to be that way.
Yeah, that's Paul's whole mantra, is to mislead.
Yeah, to mislead.
Wow.
okay, now he shall divide. So I looked up the word for divide, and it is to flatter with smooth talk.
It's false.
In the sense of a smooth talker.
Mm-hmm.
And slippery, like in smooth.
Ooh, conniving.
Yeah.
Yeah, weaselly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Serpentine. Right. You know, Paul's like you're trying to initially ascribe his doctrine to him and set it apart from Yahweh, and it's like putting your hand in a pile of mush, of jello, you know, and of just slime, and you can't get hold of it because it just squirts out everywhere, and that's kind of Paul, you know, pretending to be all things to all people to take advantage of them. To use his own terminology. Yeah, all of that fits him.
Fits him. And then you have the word for evening and or at night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called evening, but it's also the older meanings are dark,
mm-hmm.
the dark covering, and mm-hmm. the raven.
Mm-hmm.
The ravens are black, but they also eat dead flesh.
Mm. And a raven is a... is a relatively conniving animal, and probably the smartest of all the birds, and a conniving animal. But also a predator in the sense, more vulture kind of predator. It likes to feed on the dead.
Yeah. Then you move to the next word, which is the prey or the booty, and it means to. See and contain is the ain. I mean, it's the an and the thet. But it also means the bird of prey that swoops down on its prey.
Mm-hmm.
It's now think about it, it's an eye and a container. I also use the thet sometimes as a container, as a basket. It says to bird of prey swoops down on its prey with talons firmly surrounding the prey and crushing and suffocating it.
Yeah. Think about booty, though, for a moment. How often does Yahweh tell his children to send him or his representatives money?
He doesn't ever, but he also said, don't take him so many times. He said, don't take him booty from these things that you're.
Yeah, he says, don't take booty. And he says, the last thing I want is your money. And not only I want your money, I don't want you giving money to those who represent me. You know, it's this is, in fact, the Loi, ministers who unite, whose job it was to help people understand the symbolism of Yahweh's testimony, they specifically could not be paid money, and they could not even own land, which was, of course, the ultimate symbol of accumulated wealth. So they could not own land. So. But what, by contrast, speaking of booty, what did Paul say about giving and the workers being paid, those working for him being paid, and him taking money from one assembly and giving it to another?
Yeah, he said, well, remember the poor. He was always calling himself the poor. Send me the money.
Yeah.
He took the begging bag. I mean, you know, he didn't take the begging bag, but he asked him to go ahead.
He kept on saying that, that the workers deserve their pay.
Yeah.
And he was into collecting the booty, as was of course Muhammad, who was a kind of a reincarnation of Paul in Arabia. So all of it fits.
Then we go on to devour, and devour is to eat or devour, aleph kaf lamb, a call, and also if you reverse that one, it's one I went back to the root again, and it has right next to it is kalah, which is the opposite backwards, and that means to restrain, to prison, to restrain men or animals, and to prevent them from getting away.
Well, you think of what happened in the aftermath of this transition, if you will, from Imperial Rome to Roman Catholicism under Theodosius, men were turned into serfs, and the church leaders became lords, and they were empowered with absolute, total dictatorial control over the masses. The masses were routinely imprisoned, and they had no rights. They were slaves.
Yeah.
that was the consequence of Pauline doctrine and its influence on Roman Catholicism in Europe for all those years. Yeah.
Yeah. And it even goes further. In the morning, the next line is in the morning. The next word is the couple of words are in the morning. And, of course, morning is just simply a breaking of day or daylight. But it also refers to a herdsman and one who works the cattle. And I was thinking about the goad.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, Paul refers to the goat twice. Once he ascribes Dionysus's most famous line, and understand that that Dionysus was the favored god of the elitist. Those like Hadrian, for example, was very high up in the Dionysus ruling establishment. He actually went to Greece many times to participate in and to lead the Dionysus Holy Week, which is essentially what Easter has become. And it was in Greece, the most famous line attributed to Dionysus was, it's difficult to rebel against, to kick against the goad. And the goad is this sharp pointed stick used to herd dumb animals. And, of course, the line means that you cannot successfully rebel against politics and religion unless you are willing to endure the attempts of others manipulating you with a sharp pointed stick, a goad. For the last mention in terms of this indictment of what Benjamin was and would become, and indictment against Benjamin's most famous heir depicts him as a wolf. Does it not?
There's three more words. The last one, Benjamin, we've already covered, but there's ravenous and wolf, and these are really to the point. Ravenous, let me do ravenous first, real quickly. It obviously is to tear, to rend, like you tear cloth, to pluck.
Mm-hmm.
The prey that is torn into pieces by a predator or torn flesh, and significantly is written as a tall roche pay. A tall is a symbol of mm-hmm. a man's words, the way
mm-hmm.
I would read that.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously those are the things that tear us apart.
Tearing words,
man's words.
Divisive words. Divisive words, which is, Paul's letters, divisive words.
Exactly. Then you get to wolf. Which is, interestingly enough, it just means wolf. It also can mean a yellow color, like the animal. It was the yellowish color. The wolves there were more yellowy, like, I guess. And
mm-hmm.
But interestingly enough, what I found there was that the words are, the word is written as a, it says the ob, is a, which we kind of know what that means anyway, but, besides wolf, it's very close to separation, but it's written with a zain, an aleph, and a bet.
Okay.
So from that you should be able to derive that it means to divide and separate
mm-hmm.
the Almighty's home, family.
Right, right. And you can divide and separate unto it, or divide and separate apart from it. And
but,
Paul was the ultimate.
Wolves don't carry this stuff, too. They don't carry sheep to the herd.
No, they do not. No. In fact, that is true. So since it can mean to separate, to divide and separate unto Yahweh apart from man's institutions, or to separate a sheep from the flock and divide them away so that they can be more easily devoured. Which one is
spoil to draw out?
Right, to draw. Oh yes, to draw out.
Draw the infant out from the
right. Letter. Yeah, and that's Paul's letters are divisive. They draw people away from the covenant and away from God, and so he is playing the role of the wolf in that regard.
And he says, "I'm a Benjamite. I'm a wolf." And
right.
And God said, Benjamites are the wolves. Now, if I was Benjamin and I was getting this blessing, so
mm-hmm. well, yes.
I would say, Dad, give me a break here.
Oh.
How can you say something like this to me? I'm your son.
Right. Why would you, if you're Paul, twice admit to being a Benjamite when Yosha, and he knew it, Not only did he know what Yahweh said about the Benjamites, that they're wolves and that they're vicious and that they were lowly and little, which is the Apollos name that he took, but he's just flaunting this at us because he knew that Yahusha said that a wolf in sheep's clothing will lure you away from the Torah. And here's Paul announcing that he's the Benjamite wolf. And then he's also announcing that he will pretend to be what he is not to win an advantage over people, which is the very definition of a wolf in sheep's clothing. So, you know, he's pretending. In fact, if we read the next line in Galatians, he will actually say that the spirit that acted and had previously acted in Shimon Kefesh, Peter, was the one that was now acting in him. So he is pretending to be one of them.
Yeah.
The sheep.
Yeah.
But yet he is the Benjamite wolf that would separate the sheep from their shepherd. You couldn't be more obvious.
Well, I mean, this has been lying around for a long time, this blessing.
Right.
Paul is called a wolf, and Paul is called a Benjamite.
Right.
I mean, my God, I can't find one word in here that's positive.
No. No, why would you admit that you're a Benjamite when every bit of this is not only negative, but in direct opposition and hostility towards Yahudah, which represents Yahweh and Yahusha?
Right.
And the means to reconciliation, the means to engage in a relationship with Yah, to relate to Yah, you're in opposition to all of those things, and you admit it, and then say God chose you? Where is there a prophecy that said that God's going to choose a Benjamite to heal the world? Or did he just say to Benjamites, you're scum, you're lowly, you're little, you're depressed, you're vicious, you're wolves, you separate my children? The opposite of what Paul claims about himself, isn't it?
Yes, sir.